Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello, welcome to the Autism Detectives. This is Patricia Lemmer, your hostess, and I'm the author of Outsmarting Autism. I'm thrilled today to have as my guest James Lyons Weiler, and he is also an author and a longtime friend, and I've been wanting to have you on the show for so long, Jack. I'm excited. Welcome.
Thank you, Patty. Thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here.
Great. So, Jack is the author of The Environmental and Genetic Causes of Autism, which in its almost 10 years has really become a classic that everybody refers to when we ask, is autism really a mystery? Well, Jack doesn't think so because he went over about 2,000 studies and came up with some answers, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did. I mean, I wrote this book after trying to write a chapter on vaccines where the central thesis of that chapter in my book, Cures versus Profits, was that vaccines, you know, were safe and effective. And when I tried to go look at the evidence as a scientist, just naively walking into studies expecting to find the evidence to be strong, I found it to be atrociously horrible. Now I speak of it as not qualifying as science. The degree to which the studies are manipulated, the data are tortured, it's truly legendary. And, you know, to make vaccines appear safe to the public and to policymakers and lawmakers, I had to ask the question, okay, if they're faking the studies on vaccines and autism to hide the truth, then there must also be a signal on the pathophysiology or the mechanism of disease about how vaccines might cause autism in the literature. And I dedicated, you know, 8 months of my life to writing the book.
Thank you for doing that. So you are really like Andy Wakefield in that you fell down this rabbit hole, not as a parent, not as a practitioner, but somebody who was a curious scientist who was looking for the truth, right?
Yeah, in my scientific career, I was in the Department of Pathology at the University of Pittsburgh. I had studied, you know, causes of disease. I was in the Cancer Center at UPCI in Pittsburgh, and, you know, my focus was on biomarkers of disease and how genes and proteins give a signature about what's going on in terms of biological signaling leading to disease and disease states. And I was expert before I became a faculty member in advanced statistical analysis, and so, yeah, I could see immediately what was going on, and it was really inappropriate and harmful to an untold number of people. I didn't ask for this gig. My book, After Cures versus Profits, was supposed to be a book on the evolution of consciousness on the tree of life. I was going to just study consciousness as a characteristic of living things.
Wow.
And, you know, go into brain science, and I got more brain science than I ever imagined going into the 2,000 studies on the mechanisms that lead to the diagnosis of autism.
So when you started researching and looking at 50 years of research on autism, you were not targeting vaccines, right? You were targeting toxins.
That's right. In fact, my literature search method was to look at, think of the categories of suspected or known causes of autism. For instance, valproic acid was published as a known cause of autism. It reliably reproduces autism in mice when you give it an appropriate dose, and to the pregnant dams. So I simply came up with an outline for a book, and then I did a huge literature search on it, and I read 1,000 studies, and then I had to update the outline of the book to reflect what the content of the scientific literature was. In the process, downloading another 2,000, I can honestly say I read 2,000, but I downloaded 3,000 and skimmed about 1,000 to try to understand, what does the knowledge space look like? And so my book is really kind of a compilation up to 2014, 2015, on what was being published about genetics of autism, what was actually known, not what was being said in terms of a narrative, how genetics and environment probably interact, but they hadn't done some studies to understand that yet. They had more variants, it's called, to explain in the genetic studies that could only be attributed to environment. So over 50% of the liability goes to environment. Just looking at the significant role of toxins and the interactions, even of individual toxins with individual genetic concerns, then say, okay, wait a minute, there are multiple routes to autism, one of which is not genetic. There probably has been virtually no one, statistically no one has ever been born with genetic autism. The probability that 3 or 4 of the very, very rare mutations that could cause a person to be given a diagnosis of autism coming together in one person in one generation is, diminishingly small. So there's no confusion there, and yet the narrative that they tried to put out, and I think they failed, was to say that autism is genetic.
So there's no autism gene, and there are a combination of genes which are seen more often in families with autism, but you can't certainly implicate those. Is that correct?
Yeah, right. So a naive person might look at autism and look at the maiden characteristics, right? So there's potentially cognitive issues, definitely speech issues, neurodevelopmental differences, if you will, some motor neural, and then social. And then you would look at this and say, oh, I see. So what we're going to find are genes that are involved in brain function. And there are some genes that are involved in brain function, but they only make up the problem was there are too many genes. There are too many autism genes. There were about 880 autism genes published in the literature at that time. And none of them explained the majority of the cases of autism in any way that you could say there is an autism gene, but each instead explain 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% of the liability, if you will. And so, there's something else going on, and that something else going on is in other pathways that we wouldn't suspect might be involved in autism, as you well know, Patty, that the inability of people to handle the increasing number and diversity of types of toxins on the planet. I'm convinced that if vaccines didn't exist, we would still have eventually developed an autism epidemic. Vaccines pushed more kids over the edge faster with aluminum and mercury and other things, and also the touch of autoimmunity that comes along with autism and the harm, the specific route of elimination of the mercury or aluminum through the gut, and how it impairs not only the cells of the lining of the intestine, but also to produce, a useful environment in the lumen of the gut for proper digestion, but also the bacteria themselves in the gut, the microbiome. And so all of that was abundantly clear, but CDC wasn't talking about any of it. And, there was not a single person in public health that was aware of all this research that was willing to talk about it. In
Isn't
any real
amazing?
Way. Yeah.
So we know that you can't have a genetic epidemic, that those genes have to be turned on somehow. And that's where the toxins enter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of your listeners may well know about the MTHFR pathway, for instance, and people who have problems methylating also may have problems detoxifying. There are many, many ways to have problems detoxifying. You can have problems detoxifying because you have any of the 20,000 protein-coding genes in your body may have a mutation that causes them in any cell in your tissue to not fold properly. And our immune system usually has a handy way of dealing with those cells, but you know, the cell can swell up with unfolded proteins that are improperly folded. That's called the unfolded protein response. It's also known as the ER stress response. And it just so happens that mercury in vaccines and aluminum vaccines also cause ER stress and the unfolded protein response. So if you have a genetic, you know, one or two genes that cause you to not be able to properly fold your proteins, and then along comes some environmental toxin that also induces ER stress, then you can get a genetic environment interaction that way. The MTHFR pathway can provide you with a genetic interaction in terms of your inability to detoxify to certain toxins, but you never see the toxins, but for those toxins, you would never have had a problem.
Wow. So I think most of our listeners are familiar with that there was mercury in vaccines and that there were a whole lot of hearings and then that they allegedly pulled the mercury out of vaccines and then they replaced it with aluminum, and that both of those are very toxic to the nervous system. But they're not alone, are they? There's all other kinds of toxins, especially acetaminophen, for instance, which is still widely used and recommended by pediatricians to use hand in hand with the vaccination. Is that still true?
Oh, yeah. Acetaminophen, an ingredient popular in Tylenol, helps the body impair detoxification by soaking up the glutathione, keeping it busy when the glutathione is supposed to be there to tag toxins from any number of exposures, from air pollution to ingestion to water to injection. And, the sheer diversity of toxins that could be involved if you have impaired detoxification is obviously huge. And so, you know, you also have this other compendium of clinical symptoms and complaints associated with detoxification deficiency that are consistent with but not always found in autism. So they're frequently found in autism. The epidemiologists would say, oh, those are comorbidities. There's a profound disinterest among epidemiologists about causality and how things interact with each other. And, we have a long way to go to upgrade science so that all parts of science can talk to and understand each other. But you're right, Patty. I found a huge number of different toxins part of my motivation to try to help was, well, if they're not going to clean up the vaccines, then we have to warn people about other toxins where we're not going to be persecuted by talking about air pollution and water pollution and pollution in the food and pollution in the furniture, pollution on the playgrounds at schools, right? We're not going to be, I was sure we wouldn't be castigated for talking about those kinds of toxins. And so I went to the task of creating a course. It's called the Environmental Toxicology, Ecosystem, and Human Health. Because, you know, I'm a biologist by training, so I'm concerned about all living things. But, yeah, I have 18 lectures. I teach it through the Institute, ipac-edu.org. And you can learn about a huge number of different toxins that you're exposed to all the time, how to avoid them, you know, what can be done socially through institutions to try to mitigate exposure, Like, you know, parents shouldn't just blindly drop their kids off at school and think everything's okay by any means. There's
right.
the food that they eat. There's the play when they're on the playground. And there's the grounds themselves. What are the cleaners that are being used? And you should be an activist for clean schools if you have kids in schools. And if you don't have kids in schools and you love human beings, you should be an activist for clean schools, too.
And there should be a green team at every school. And if there isn't one, parents can start one.
Yeah, it's our responsibility to protect our kids because, you know, those who are charged with it, you drop your kids off at school, the state has your child for all of those hours, you know, however many hours there are, depending on your kid, and they are not really thinking about environmental exposures.
Right. So this book, The Environmental and Genetic Causes of Autism, is pretty dense. And because you're a biologist, a scientist, and ecologist, you have really gone deep into the science. Do you think a parent can glean something by reading this, or is this something that a parent should give to their doctors, to their even to their school principals?
Yeah, that's a great question. Initially, people were overwhelmed by it, but then parents started pushing through it, and they realized if they took it a piece at a time and thought about what was being
right.
said, you know, and they used the internet to look up definitions, or and so, you know, Polytomy of Vax fame and CHDTV, she used to say, you know, you have to speak in a way that people can understand you. And so far, I think, you know, most of your listeners will agree. They've understood almost everything I've said. Maybe there are some terms in there they didn't understand, but, Patty, I went to the extent of creating an online college for people so they can come take Biology 1 and Biology 2. They can take genetics. Yeah, they can take the environmental toxicology course I mentioned. I actually have an entire course on immunology and a course on autoimmunity.
And I want to go into your college in more depth, and I just think it's amazing. You and I have talked a little bit about my perhaps teaching a course based on my book there. But
we'd love to have you.
I think we can't undersell parents understanding of this, and our warrior moms today are just as capable as understanding the science as their doctors, and sometimes even more so and more open, because they have this aha response, oh my goodness, that's what happened to my kid.
Yeah, well, this is that's called real world data now, right? And so we have real-world data, and when the doctors deny causality of vaccine injury, they're denying their own clinical experience. They're not just denying to the parents that, oh, no, this didn't happen, and they're not just gaslighting the parents. They're denying their own clinical evidence, what they see with their eyes and ears, and they hear with their ears.
Right.
And so, you know, the integrity, the principles, and the character of the pediatricians who are afraid to have said, well, maybe this one was a vaccine-induced injury because I've only seen 100 before that, but I have to say no every time. You know, maybe, hopefully, at least half of them now are willing to talk about it because they have personally seen the politicization of science to the point where science doesn't make any sense. Government-funded science doesn't make any sense anymore.
It doesn't. And it's sad, isn't it, that we really can't depend on the government-funded science and believe it.
Well, it's sad, but, you know, I also think that we can move into an area where we're relying less and less on government-funded science, and we can create new funding mechanisms for research. Created IPAC, the Research Institute, in 2015 for that, and since then we've had the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation come out. Excuse me, Children's Health Defense has a science department with Brian Hooker, and the McCullough Foundation is doing a great job publishing whatever they find in the studies that they conduct. And so, you know, if the public really wants change, then and objectivity in science is dead if it's government funded, they should want to get behind objective science funded by the public, directly by the public. And that's why IPAC, the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge, really broke new ground in that area. I know Brian Hooker was doing independent studies on his own, and Neil Miller a few, and there was a guy in Brazil, and a few people here and there, but they weren't funded.
Right.
And I've created institutions, including an institutional review board, which is an ethics board that overlooks studies that are proposed to be conducted. We have about 50 people on an IRB that
they're
waiting for proposals from other scientists that want to do objective studies that otherwise would be denied by the IRB because, oh, well, that might show something's wrong with the vaccine, or that might show that that particular food additive has problems or is linked to ADHD.
So Brian Hooker has been on my show, and I actually have been on his show, too, on CHD. He's the chief science researcher for Children's Health Defense, and he's the father of a vaccine-damaged young adult son. And Brian, if our listeners haven't listened to my interview with Brian Hooker, that's a really good one to listen to. And Brian is... he's been out there talking about vaccine safety for a long, long time. Jack, you've mentioned IPAC a couple of times. We need to take a break, and when we come back, I want to delve deep into IPAC, your Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge that you founded. You're listening to the Autism Detective. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detectives. I'm speaking with James Lyons Weiler, the president and founder of IPAC, the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. Jack, this is such an important institute, and it's a 501c3 that is looking at research, funding research, supporting people who are doing independent research. Tell us about the various components of IPAC. When was it founded?
It was founded in 2015, and I have to say it's not a 501c3. It's a not-for-profit in the state Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. The reporting requirements are a little less stringent, but we have been doing science since we were founded, and the first studies that the public funded directly included a look at aluminum dosing in the CDC's pediatric vaccination schedule. The CDC had been claiming, as well as the FDA, had published a paper claiming that the aluminum in their vaccine schedule was safe, the amount of aluminum, but I couldn't find in the citations that they were publishing any evidence where, like, you know, newborn mice were given the dose equivalent of 250 micrograms of aluminum, as is found in the hepatitis B vaccine, or where a mouse was brought into adulthood with repeated vaccines on the same schedule as humans, or even half of the schedule, you know, not obviously with dose it per body weight. And so it dawned upon me, looking at their claim that the vaccines are safe, that they actually, looking at their claims, they based their claims based on oral forms of aluminum fed to adult mice, not injected forms of aluminum injected into infant mice.
Mm.
And so there
little
we have a number of
huh?
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a number of problems there. They're called confounders, and we really don't know if any of those data actually apply to humans being injected with aluminum, let alone human infants. So we looked at the old studies where they had done human injections. They were adult human injections with the same type of aluminum that's found in hepatitis B and other vaccines. So the aluminum's there to allegedly act as an adjuvant. And they had actually dosed about a dozen men with radioactive aluminum hydroxide to see how rapidly they cleared the aluminum hydroxide. And then, so we had those clearance models, and then we adjusted, and we know that infants are not men and that they're actually growing every day. So from day one of birth until adulthood, we have the body weight curves that are published. Those are public knowledge, the median body weight. So we could very easily then mathematically determine what percentage of time in the CDC schedule over any given period of time in their infancy or childhood is a child in aluminum whole body toxicity, given the amount that's injected and given what would happen to the clearance given the body weight. So this is a very straightforward exercise. It led to three publications, and in the first publications we simply created the world's first pediatric dose limit for vaccines. And we published that. That's IPAC. That wasn't FDA. We're doing the government's job at that point. They should have done this. And that was well received by the reviewers. One of the reviewers on that one was published in, I think, in 2018. They applauded us for our audacity for taking on the FDA on this issue.
Good for you.
There's been no response from the FDA. We published the PDL. The CDC hasn't moved their dosing or anything like that. They haven't changed the schedule. But the next study that we did something more. We actually determined, you know, how often is a child under the pediatric schedule over that pediatric dose limit. And we found on day one that kids are somewhere 15 or 16 times the dose.
On day one?
On day one, 15 or 16 times the dose that an adult would get corrected for body weight. It's very simple math. It's just a simple ratio. But we published that, and we also then found in the same study that kids are in whole-body aluminum toxicity in the first year of life 100% of their days.
And what can you do? If you're a parent listening to this, what can you do?
Well, I mean, obviously you want to avoid exposure to aluminum.
That
if I knew that in 1999 and 2000, when I was having my babies with my wife, then I absolutely would not have wanted that aluminum in there. Especially now that I know that scientists routinely and reliably use the same exact aluminum hydroxide to cause allergies, to cause autoimmunity in mice, so that they can study pharmaceutical drugs to find out what treats them. It's really
so this
quite disturbing.
Aluminum research isn't American, is it?
I think some of it is American, but they publish it in journals where pharmaceutical companies will find it, and they advertise. It's the aluminum research is not done to show that aluminum's toxic. It's done to show that they can reliably produce disease, so that you can study them with their mice and with the aluminum and bring your drug and try to cure asthma in mice, and then market your drug. So they had published that, and I found all that and made a major review. And then during COVID, of course, kids were left out of the vaccine schedule, and I suspected that when they opened up schools again, that the kids would be given a massive dose of aluminum.
Which of course they were.
To catch up. And so we studied the CDC's catch-up schedule, and we found, you know, for the most part, it was not that different from the regular schedule, but if you're very young and very small, it's a big difference, right? So for most of the kids that are, say, over 4 or 5 years old, school age, you know, the younger you are, the worse it is, but the older you are, it's not that different from.
Okay.
And not, that doesn't mean it's safe. It just means it's not that different from the original schedule. So,
right.
But, yeah, having somebody, having a team of people, I've had different people working with me over the years on these data with me and publishing it. You know, they've come after our papers to try to get them retracted, and we fight back and we win every time, except for the Paul Thomas data. That got retracted, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But We have done nothing but research since 2015 in the public interest without profit motive. And,
one of those people you've been working with is Dr. Fry.
I haven't conducted research with him, but he did write the foreword to my book.
Yeah, he did. He's been put on the map with his research on mitochondrial dysfunction and its relationship to vaccines and toxins, correct?
Yeah. So that's in my book too. He read the book before he agreed to write the foreword, and then he said, "My God, James, you've just outlined the next 5 years of my research for me."
Oh my goodness!
James, we gotta take
a break. And when we come back, I want to hear more about that and also some of the courses that you're giving in IPAC. You've mentioned a couple of them, but these are really exciting courses that people need to learn about. You're listening to The Autism Detective with James Lyons-Weiler. We'll be right back.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Lemmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to The Autism Detective. James Lyons-Weiler is telling us about IPAC, his organization, Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. It wears a lot of hats. And you've been telling us about your research. I want you to tell us about your courses, because this is just a wonderful way. It's like an online college for people who don't have a science background to learn everything they need to know to help their kids, and just out of curiosity, tell us about it.
Yeah, so I got really excited during COVID, thinking about how I could help people who were locked in their homes due to the lockdown, and then, of course, knowing what I knew about many, many families of parents with kids with autism. There are many families prior to COVID that were on essential lockdown, couldn't go anywhere, and constant attention and that kind of thing. And then I started thinking about the elderly population. They don't necessarily have a lot of money, and they can't travel,
right,
and that kind of thing, and their kids don't come over. And I said, well, they can learn. I can teach college-level almost any biology course. I've had them all, right? I should be able to teach anything I've had, right? So my first course was the environmental toxicology course, but then I thought, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of biology here. I better add Bio 1 and 2. So you can go and take a college-level Bio 1 course and Bio 2. That's how it was done in college. I wanted a genetics course, so I hired someone in Florida because I didn't have time to put that course together, Dr. Dean Croshaw. And then I realized, you know, with COVID, then people were being lied to, of course, by the CDC and Fauci and others on the basis of immunology. They were getting away with murder, taking advantage and gaslighting people on some pretty complex topics. I mean, you've got an injectable mRNA and a lipid nanoparticle, and the science says that it's all safe and it's going to stop transmission and all the rest. But what about the basics of immunology? So I added an 18-lecture course in immunology. And these courses are live, by the way. I meet with the students and then do the lecture, and then they can ask questions and answers at the end.
And they're self-paced, right? You can take it at your...
Pretty much. There's some that are self-paced. I prefer to do the live, and then you can actually you'll receive the video after every live session. So in a way, you can do it self-paced if you can't make it on the calendar, if you miss a class.
Okay.
But then I did an entire course on autoimmunity, and that was really interesting and helpful to people. But then people started coming to me, wanting to teach courses with me, and
I love that.
And I started recruiting them. So about half of our courses are on holistic health, integrative health. You know, we've got a course by Dr. David Brownstein, Dr. Jen Kozak, who I know you just had on your show.
Right.
We have so many interesting courses by other people. Brad Miller, who was the 101st Airborne Commander, one of them, who quit the military out of refusal of the vaccine, and correctly so, it was a wise choice. Alexis Baden-Meyer of Organic Consumers is coming to teach a course on getting the military pharmaceutical industrial complex out of food and farming.
Wonderful.
Dr. Jessica Rose is teaching about viruses this fall. And
wow.
Really,
and how are they priced? How are these courses priced? They're reasonable.
Well, they're variably priced. I mean, sometimes I put them on sale because I need a few more people to sign up, like $45 or $60. But typically they're $160 to $180. So it's about $10 to $11 or $12 a class meeting.
That's
what you're
very reasonable.
You're getting real time contact with the instructor, and you're joining the IPAC EDU community. They're starting to call themselves IPACians. It's really nice.
And I love that. And
yeah.
I hope to teach a course for you next year, beginning at 25, based on my book. And I'm trying to decide what to do with my book. It's gone out of print after 5 years, and I might chop it up and put it into three smaller books, and then that might mean three smaller courses. We'll see.
Well, that would be lovely. We'd love to have you.
Well,
so,
thank you.
If people go to ipac-edu.org, find the registration page, you can sign up. A few of the courses have started. They're only a week or two in. So you'll get the past lectures, but we do need people to sign up for these courses for them to run. So we have to have a full roster, or they don't run. Everybody has to wait another semester.
Wow.
So you might be helping somebody else by signing up, too.
Yep. Now, if somebody listening has an idea for a course, can they propose one?
Oh, sure. They can send it to questions@ipak-edu.org. You can send any questions there. And we also have a Monday evening webinar, a science webinar every Monday at 7 p.m. If you find that, it's the science director's.
Wow.
It's the weekly director science webinar.
Is that free?
No, that's $12 a week. You subscribe
bad.
And you get access to 80 past lectures. So.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow, and that's an hour long?
Yeah, usually an hour, but sometimes the discussion could go, you know, sometimes 2 hours. Don is the host there with me. He's a co-host. He does a really good job. He asks a lot of interesting in-depth questions.
Very cool. Now, this book was written pre-COVID. So what would you add now that we've lived through COVID and all that craziness?
Yeah, so part of what we learned with COVID was to look for the mechanisms of disease based on the symptoms of the vaccine injury, which is kind of where we started with this. Like, okay, you've got an autism, so you would look for, you know, something associated with genetics with the brain. But in COVID, we found that there are multiple routes to myocarditis and other problems with the heart that, you know, mainstream medicine knows about. They've acknowledged it, but of course they don't tell you about it when they tell you to get the shot. But in terms of autism, if I were to do autism environmental genetic causes again and do, say, version 2.0, I've taken a look and I've kept up with the literature, and there has been study after study after study on mitochondrial dysfunction, the genetic environment and their interactions, that basically affirms everything I put in the book. I mean, there's nothing that's been published except for around the MMR. They published another couple of studies that ostensibly say the MMR is safe, but that's epidemiology, and they cook the books on those studies. So okay. I can tell you right exactly, we don't have time, but I can tell you exactly how they cook the books.
Uh-oh.
But in terms of what the book has, it has held up very well to further studies along the same lines. We know what causes autism. It's too many toxins. Which kind? It depends on the person. But it's too many toxins in a particular environmental context. That's
right.
Not complex. But we also now know that much of the problem is motor neural, and that people can communicate. Just because you can't talk doesn't mean you can't communicate. We've learned this through J.D. Handy's work with the Spellers.
Yep.
The Spellers community, young adults who haven't had a word to say in 14 years are now communicating expertly with a 150,000, 200,000 word vocabulary, just like any other neurotypical person.
I have a half dozen interviews with some of the founders of Spellers and families of young adults who are now communicating. James, it's time to take our last break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about who's at risk, or is there such a thing as a safe vaccine, and how we can protect our future generations. You're listening to The Autism Detective. We'll be right back.
You know, when my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detective. James Lyons-Weiler is telling us about his research and his organization, IPAC. Jack, how will they find you? Can they email you at what address?
Yeah, the best thing to do is actually go to my Substack, Popular Rationalism,
Popular Rationalism has about 80,000 reads a week, and I put all of my announcements there. All of our courses are announced there, and you also get free articles. So it's popularrationalism.substack.com.
Terrific. Now, you have two other studies you wanted to mention, one with Russell Blaylock, and who was the other? Oh, Paul Thomas.
Yeah, well, Paul Thomas had 10 years of data out in Oregon, and he was against the ropes with the Oregon Medical Board for having kids in his practice who were not vaccinated or not fully vaccinated in some cases. And they put the challenge to him during his persecution to bring forward data that showed that the unvaccinated kids were not more sick than the vaccinated kids. And so when he and I got to know each other, he was talking about this. I said, well, let's look at the data. And we put together a study of 10 years. I designed the actual, it's not a complex study design. You compare the vaccinated to the unvaccinated, but you also had kids that were somewhat vaccinated. So we had a unique opportunity here where we had a dose variation in vaccination total.
Right.
And then we looked at the number of times the kids that were vaccinated or unvaccinated, how many times did they have to go to the doctor because they were sick for things like asthma, allergic rhinitis, sinusitis, anemia, how many had a diagnosis of ADHD and things like that. We looked at really, how often were the parents bringing them in because they were sick, separate from the well-child visit. And so we did this, and the curves were just astounding. We just, blew our minds of the original analysis. We had about 4,000 or so, I think it was 3,300 patients. And the kids with anemia were all vaccinated.
And the bottom line is the unvaxxed were healthier than the vaxxed.
Yeah, there were no diagnoses of ADHD among the unvaccinated.
Amazing.
And Paul and his colleagues in the office were not responsible for ADHD diagnosis.
So what happened?
And so 5 days after it was published, they suspended Paul's license.
Isn't that awful?
About respiratory infections and eye disorders. You know about those, Patty.
Yep.
Asthma. So his license was suspended.
Isn't that terrible?
And then I said to him, you have not had due process. You're entitled to due process. Where's the hearing? You're being penalized. And his practice was still running. He had other doctors working in the practice. And so his lawyer wrote a letter challenging them on due process, and he got his license back, but it was under the condition that he not do any more science. So he called me and said, do you think I should do it? I said, yeah, you go to the kids. You're their doctor. Go be a doctor. I'm the scientist. And so then we found that Russell Blaylock was willing to address further analysis of the data. It was needed because the paper, about 5 months after it was published, and about 250,000 people read the study, it was retracted after one person wrote in who guessed and only guessed. He didn't have any data, but he claimed that the unvaccinated kids weren't making the well-child visits at the same rate as the vaccinated.
Please.
And so my hands were tied for a while because Paul couldn't publish a rebuttal. And so one paper was retracted, that paper was retracted. And so Russell Blaylock and I looked at the data, and we looked at two things. Who goes to the well-child visits more, vaxxed or unvaxxed? Well, it turned out that the unvaxxed went to the well-child visits more than the vaxxed, remarkably. So the bias would have worked in our favor.
Amazing.
And so you'd think that the paper would be unretracted, and we told the journal about it, but they didn't do it. And then Dr. Blaylock also wanted to know, what if kids had been vaccinating and stopped versus kids that had been vaccinated and continued? And, of course, the people that stopped vaccinating were more healthy.
Amazing.
And so that's published as a second paper in the International Journal of Vaccine Theory Research and Practice.
We're running out of time. I want to ask you an important question. Do you think there's such a thing as a safe vaccine?
I think every single vaccine causes injury of some way, and I don't mean the needle prick, and I don't mean the swelling in the arm. It's an adjustment. It's an alteration to the immune system. It's the long-term effects that are not well studied. And, you know, the people that are at most risk, they may have a genetic risk of some type that makes it more pronounced. But I think it's a safe vaccine. You're introducing antigens that have unknown effects on the human biology. So
right.
I have to hedge and say it depends on your definition of safety. We'll have to talk about that in more detail another time.
But can we identify who might be at risk? Can we protect our babies, our kids?
I could. If I was given enough funding, I could come up with the biomarkers and the prediction model. The number one predictor to me would be if you have vaccine injury in your family or autoimmunity in your family, you probably have an issue. But
so why aren't we paying attention to that? Is it just too inconvenient?
Well, there are contraindications that are known and published for adults for vaccination, but there are none for children.
Huh.
And those contraindications could be used as a prediction model and actually learn what the algorithms are to say, no, you can't get this vaccine. You're contraindicated for this. It should be automated by now. It's 2024.
It should be, yeah. It should be. Well, James, I just think this is so, so helpful. I'm so glad that you were able to come on the program. And I know you've had some issues at home, and I hope that your partner is getting better. And there's a GoFundMe account out there for Grace, who's been through hell, and I hope that she's able to gain back her function.
Thank you. She's doing remarkably well, considering. And I'm going to put the word out there. If you've had stroke, or anyone in your family member has had stroke, it's a time for loving healing. It's not a time for conflict.
Well, that's really, really an important message. And Grace had a stroke because of a medication. Is that correct?
Yeah, she was getting some eye surgery, and they found some bleeding in the eye, so they injected a long duration exposure steroid, and long duration exposure to steroids are a known risk factor because it raises your blood pressure. So it's not complicated. It's actually elementary and trivial, the cause, but in reality, she also wants people to know to check your lifestyle factors and keep your blood pressure in check.
Well, thank you for that, because we all have things in our life that raise our blood pressure for sure. And people who raise our blood pressure. So thank you, Jack. What's on tap for the future? Any more books?
Well, I've been developing so many courses. I do have ideas for books. The question is time. But I write at Popular Rationalism every week, so you can go to popularrationalism.substack.com and get the latest.
And is that something you subscribe to?
Yeah, it's a free subscription. It's supported by paid subscribers, but all my articles are open. There's a nice history there, through COVID especially.
Uh-huh. Okay. Popularrationalism.substack.com.
That's
right. You have to have a Substack account, right?
Nope. It's just go to the internet. You can read it without a Substack account.
Oh, good, good. And is that where the Monday night webinar is?
Yeah, you'll find the announcements for the Monday evening webinar there, yeah.
And what's coming up in those?
Suzanne Humphries is coming up this Monday.
No kidding.
No kidding.
We love her.
We do.
She's brilliant. You're hanging out with all the brilliant people.
It's the smartest people that figure out the problems in society, isn't it?
It really is, and it's the bravest people, too.
Yeah.
You're among one of the courageous.
Thank you, Patty.
Along with Ann Daschle, I know you've done some work with her. She's been on my show, too.
Yeah, and Ann is great. Age of Autism is foundational. People should go back and look at those articles, too, if you want to know about who knew what, when, and where about causality
right.
and autism. Age of Autism is huge.
Well, Jack, thank you so much for being on the show. I know you're busy, and I really appreciate your taking the time. So good luck to you.
Thank you, Patty.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Lemmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to Bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.